Revolution, Volume 5, Episode 63. We're back again, back on a Friday night, live from the bunker. It's the One Man Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Revolutionary, joined by
the comrade
and
the Canadian
and the peanut calories in a bath.
Nice.
I was like, I walked in there and she goes, hey, you're going to see your wife naked. And I went, oh, that's a terrible thing.
Oh,
why
no.
would I want to do that?
Yeah.
And then I turned the corner and she was in the bathroom. I'm like, what are you doing in a bathtub? All right. So
she's taking a bath like all those people on the
anybody
the
who bets. Has. Yeah. Any. Yeah, exactly.
Like Bitcoin.
Bitcoin. Anybody with cryptocurrency right now.
Taking a bath.
Yeah. And all of us who are taking a bath in Brent crude oil.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I got one of these.
Oh, yeah.
It is it is only, if I could scroll my thing, it won't scroll for some reason. Hold on. Why aren't you scrolling for me? Here we go. Scroll. Why aren't you scrolling? It won't scroll. It won't turn. Yeah, my
is
laptop.
Is it scrolling backwards?
No, it's not scrolling backwards. It's now trying to make me make like notes on this stupid document. All right, here we go. It is only 1,021 days until the next president, whoever that might be, would be constitutionally elected. It's getting closer, friends.
Yeah.
It's also the month of April, and today is the horribly named third day of Passover. Oh, no, wait. Good Friday.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's Good Friday. And for that, cheers. All right, so that's that one.
Was ready.
We'll share that one.
It did not surprise me with its overfullness because this brewery likes to really pack them in.
And that's for
and
fun.
While you pour that, I'll do my shotgun.
Oh, you're going to do a shotgun? Okay. The Canadian, unfortunately, a few weeks back,
don't
it was
spill
the 13th.
On the couch.
It was the 13th. He did a boo boo and like said the F word like way too many times.
And then he brought out his bimbo tits and we had to call him there.
Oh, Robert Paulson had bitch tits. Bob had bitch tits.
Yeah, look, the good news is it wasn't puppy play, so he's still alive.
We all know. We will talk about that.
Yeah. You guys want to count me down?
Three, two, and one. Oh God. Oh. It's like watching a baby drink a bottle. It's awesome.
That's pretty good.
That's
pretty good.
I like it.
Not bad.
Oh, there it goes.
Ooh, Summerfest. Springfest.
So you shotgunned the Springfest by what, Sierra Nevada.
Yeah.
It is an IPA at 6%. And the top of the thing says family owned and argued over. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or operated and argued over. So I have one of those as my backup. Of course, the one I opened is Sideward Brewing. Doesn't put it out that often, but when they do, I have to get it. Mm-hmm. It is the Yacht Money.
It's
spelled Y-A-C-H-T, Yacht Money. And it is a triple IPA, I think it is. It's a New England Pale Ale, but it weighs in at a very heavy weight.
Really?
It's
very cloudy and juicy.
Yeah, yeah. It weighs in at like 9.5 to 12%. It's somewhere in the middle, somewhere in there.
Smells like it.
Yeah, it's a heavyweight. They always put it out, and so I went and got that at their 7th anniversary party this past weekend. Yeah. We went for hangover brunch, which is the best time to go.
Yeah.
You get to see all of the folks who are the owners and other brewers who come in and go, wow, that was a hell of a party last night.
Yeah.
And I will say their breakfast burritos are stupid.
Yeah. Sideward food is good.
Oh, I mean, 8%. So much. 8%? Well, that's not so bad. But it tastes like more.
It smells like more.
It's very much. It's a very.
I like an IPA that, fun is, beer that, to drink. That like lets you know that you're in for a good time, as opposed to like you know beer hugs where it's like, no, don't worry about it. Oh shit.
Yeah. It's very sweet and very bitter at the same time,
And a lot of aromatic hops.
Yeah.
It's got a good aroma. Mm-hmm. It's good beer. I like
it
that
is
beer.
Very good beer.
That's lovely.
And they call it Yacht Money because of the number of hops they use in this beer.
Oh, really?
It costs so much money for hops. Yeah.
It's like five or six different types. It's ridiculous.
And you've got to say it like you're Thurston Howell.
It's yacht money.
Oh, yes, honey. Lovey, pass me the yacht money.
Yes, pass it to me now. Thank you. Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's delicious.
So I guess you'd be Thirsty Howell.
Thirsty Howell? Yeah, there it is. Thirsty Howell, the fourth. Yeah.
Not like thirsty. So
what are you drinking, comrade?
I've got the hangs.
You got the hangs?
I got the hangs.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm figuring it out. I'll get through it. I'm also drinking the hangs.
Yes, it's a pilsner.
By Sideward Brewing. It's a very malty pils.
It's nice. I like it.
They call it something else, like a city pilsner.
Pull it out. Pull it out and see what it says.
Whip it out.
Whip it out and see what it says.
All right, everybody, take a good look. Contemporary pils.
There you go. Contemporary pils.
So there's a lot of malt. There's a little bit of rice to it, I think.
Yeah, it's good.
It's not what I expected. I expect a hoppy dry pils. Usually,
It's not that. They do. For me, it's a good pils.
Mm-hmm. No, it's good. It's just like when I think pils, I think Czech pils.
And thinking dark Czech pils. Yeah, nice and caramely. And you not only have had the spring.
I had the spring fest in a hurry. Now I've got Urban Chestnuts Zwickel. Urban Chestnut out of
and depending on who you want to talk to, it could also be Chicle. Because the Z is a CH in in the foreign country.
Yeah, no, this is a German lager, unfiltered lager.
It's really nice. Cool. Another one. Oh, so like 6 years ago when we were all bound at home, mm-hmm. I biked over and I keep getting my pictures showing up in my I use Image, which also gives you your on this day.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So it's all on my self-hosted stuff, but it gives me my pictures and it's like this week was that week that I ventured out on a bicycle and got a bunch of six packs, four packs, whatever. I went to like four breweries. I dropped stuff over at the Mavericks place. You know, it's like, it's like, hey, here's beer. You guys have fun. I'll be over. I'll be in the street. And we would yell at each other from across the yard. Oh, I miss those times.
That was I remember the park hangs. Those were fun.
Yeah, I miss the fact that I was forced to stay away from people.
Oh,
you know, and
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't.
I just say no. You were forced to stay away from people, and no one could like pick on you for doing it because you were just following the rules.
It's funny because I was actually still forced to go in person to work.
Oh well, also you were welding, right?
No.
That's right. You were in the.
I was in apartments.
You were in apartments. That doesn't make any sense.
I was managing an apartment property and not allowed to stay home.
Interesting.
It fell under like critical work or whatever the hell.
Sure, it does. Yeah.
Yeah, never mind the fact that everything that people needed could be done online or over the phone.
You were just there as a warm body to, you know, catch COVID and die.
Yep.
Yeah. Somebody had to do it.
Someone had to do it.
Look, somehow I made it through that whole thing with no COVID.
That
was pretty cool, actually.
That whole before times is kind of a mystery, right? Things change so radically in 2020.
Yeah.
And it's just different now. And you throw the Trumposity in there, and it's way different. But it's kind of like, you know, before cell phones and before the internet. It's like everything's changed.
It's like the pre-iPhone thing and then the post-iPhone thing because. Yeah. Like social media wasn't really a thing until we were all stuck with it.
We had it instantly all the time.
Yeah.
I went to a trauma influence pedagogy seminar on Thursday, yesterday.
That's just trauma influence pedagogy. Just sounds like a
band name. It's mine. Take it. TMT. TMT. Yeah.
But it was trauma influence pedagogy. But it was very interesting to talk about because a lot of the research has come out because we had we had 2 years worth of students mm-hmm. that were trapped at home and now we're reaping that benefit
Oh, it's bad.
Of those.
Oh, it's bad.
But we're also going to continue to reap it because every grade level had that happen. And so there, so it was fun because the individual who was leading it, who's a doctor of sociology, she made a very, very pointed effort to say, we don't just have to give up and let people say, oh, I have trauma, so therefore you need to accommodate everything I need to do.
Right.
And the examples that I love to use are, some of the strategies they say, oh, well, you know, if someone's, you know, having a problem and they're triggered and they need to turn something in late, you know, just give them 24 hours or let them have the time. And I went, yeah, that doesn't help. Hi, that doesn't help. Trauma is trauma. So what you need to do is set really good deadlines for people. And she was like, yeah, that works really, really well, but it's very hard to get everyone on buy-in on that. And I looked around the room and I went, really? You people don't set strong, strong boundaries with your students?
Where is your syllabus?
Yeah. Where is your syllabus? Where is your stuff?
Something I point to because I've experienced people using this as an excuse. Your past personal history, traumatic or not, is no excuse to be an asshole today.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know about yourself. You know about what troubles you have. You know about the things you have difficulty dealing with. I'm not saying that you're responsible for having a reaction. What I'm saying is you're responsible for your outbursts because of that reaction.
Yeah, the right? real problem is a lot of people don't recognize that they have a trauma and that they are behaving in a way that's offensive to people.
So, comrade, what you're thinking of are adverse childhood experiences.
Yeah. No, I'm not talking about
that. No. What you were kicking back is you were saying that people are then using something that was in their past to then say, well, it's happening now. And things like abuse and neglect and household dysfunction are part of that scale. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. But you also have a scale that I love to use because, you know, my background is in psychology and sociology. So my favorite part to say is, how is this affecting you today?
Right.
I understand you went through those terrible things and they were horrible, and I agree it was terrible. Mm-hmm. But if you are maintaining that response,
what are you carrying?
What is reinforcing that response?
Yeah. If you recognize it.
If people recognize it, correct.
And if you don't recognize it, you just behave a certain way because of it, and you don't understand.
Right.
I mean, you might not be social in class, might want to raise your hand because you just feel awkward, but you don't understand that it's some event that made it so that you feel reluctant to speak.
That the professor looks like your dad who used to take a belt tea every day.
Just the situation is such that I don't want to call a problem. I don't want to make people feel bad. I don't want to feel like the fool, right? Yeah, I mean, you have all these things.
But that's a very different mindset to what I'm discussing because the people I'm talking about are the people who make it other people's problems. They're having a bad day.
Yeah, but do they understand that that's what they're doing? That's
when they explain it as, oh, I'm sorry, I have a trauma, then yes. Oh, yeah. Yes,
then
absolutely.
They understand. Then they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And again, that's what I'm getting at is it's okay to have those experiences. It's okay to have a reaction. But if you understand that's what's happening, it's not okay to use it as an excuse to be a bad person.
But look at our president. All right. So his childhood traumas are still not an excuse.
But he doesn't realize it.
No.
Hey, he's a billionaire, right?
No. Well,
he is
on
now.
Paper, he is
therapy
now.
Therapy's not that expensive.
Correct. Correct.
But you have to recognize that you need it and ask him. He'll no, he's got the perfect cognitive score.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Stephen Miller understands that he needs therapy, but that's fine.
Yeah. Being an asshole is free.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is being nice.
And actually, if you're rich enough, it doesn't cost you anything.
Right. Yeah. You're right. And so there's a scale of 31 different traumatizing events that you can refer to.
That's a small number.
Sort of like Baskin Robbins 31 flavors.
Like 31 flavors, yeah. And some of them are the
flavors of trauma.
And yeah. And 10 of them are the ones that I mentioned as childhood traumas.
Right.
But
we've all been through a bunch of these events as adults too.
Right.
You've had someone close to you die. That's a traumatic event. You've been through a weather event, like a hurricane, like in Florida. By the way, they did a study on the students at my university, and 93% of the people reported a trauma because on that 31 scale, hurricane, I mean, weather events, severe weather, where you are afraid for your life or the life of others is on there.
Is it not a sliding scale?
What do you mean?
It's a spectrum, not a data point, right?
Correct. But the point is that it's how many traumas do you have?
Okay, it's a cumulative thing.
Is a data point.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you know, not to be trite about it, although I am going to be.
Yeah.
Sure. Life is always trying to kill you. That's going to cause you trauma.
Correct. It's how you respond to trauma, which is important.
It's recognizing what it is and dealing with it.
And 100%, it's how myself as a mentor and an educator can say, I witness your trauma. I understand you're having this right now.
Yep.
But this was due for 2 weeks.
Yeah. And you were not experiencing a traumatic recurrence for two straight weeks.
Yeah. Yesterday, I have to use this one. You ran over your next door neighbor backing out of your driveway because the peanut gallery won't let me use your neighbor's pet of some type because that's too traumatic. Running over a human being is fine with her. So you run over your next door neighbor and it's like, oh, I ran over my next door neighbor and now I'm going to have to deal with this. Yeah, they should have looked both ways. Yeah, they were taking their trash out.
I was backing on my.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so now
have you seen the blind spots in modern cars?
And so now I feel really bad about that because, you know, now I'm afraid for my future, my life, my housing, everything that's going on.
Right.
And, it slipped my mind that your paper was due at, you know, at 11 o'clock last night.
Sure. If that had happened, the date was due. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then you turn it in the next morning?
If I had it written and I just like turned it in late.
And you ran over them at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah. If I had it written, I would have turned it in at 8 in the morning.
In the incredible series of events in this universe, it's plausible that this could happen.
Oh, I get it.
But the kind of person who would say, hey, I turned my paper in 3 hours late because yada, 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 it's not 2 weeks late.
Yeah,
because
it's not like I need an extra week to get
to
it
write
done.
My paper.
But
yeah.
But are you ready for this one? Here's the horrid reality of that.
Uh-huh.
If this paper is a scaffold to another paper or more research or more that's in the class, and yes, you turned it in 3 hours late. Cool, fantastic. When you ran over your neighbor, did you have your phone to call 911?
I'm giving them the full benefit.
Sure,
of the
sure,
doubt
sure.
In the hypothetical.
Sure, sure. So could they have also just gone, oh, I should just leave a voicemail for my faculty, my family,
my mom,
all the people in my life to say what happened.
I wouldn't.
Oh, I would.
I would.
I would totally.
I absolutely would.
Now, would I have remembered to call the professor?
No.
Yeah.
No. But I'd have called a bunch of people, and they might have said, hey, don't you have that paper due
tomorrow? Don't you have classes and stuff going on?
Somebody might have mentioned
and
that.
And I'd be like, hey, I can't deal with it. Can you email my professor
for
me?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Send a note.
And have him reach out. And when I, whatever. Yeah. Whatever.
And so, and another thing that happens in this same process is I had, this is my favorite story. I had a student whose best friend was attacked by a shark.
Wild. New Smyrna?
New Smyrna.
Yeah.
They were at New Smyrna. They were out
where
surfing.
Where else do you get attacked by sharks?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. They were out surfing. They were out surfing. It was middle of the day, in an afternoon.
As these things happen.
And it happened to be a day that he had an assignment due. And he then wrote me the next day, hey, man, I didn't get that assignment due because I meant to get it done, but my buddy got bitten by a shark, and so I was at the hospital all day. Here's a picture of my buddy and I in the hospital and him giving the – and his buddy's giving the thumbs up.
Sure.
And I'm like, yeah, cool. Did that work for any of the other faculty members you sent it to? And he's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, it's not going to work for me. Oh. You weren't attacked by the shark. I understand it's a traumatic event, but your buddy has medical care. You were that's a picture in the hospital at 8 p.m.
So in that vein, speaking of anecdotal one way or the other, many, many, many moons ago, a friend of the podcast was riding his motorcycle home. The Canadian and I were in the car following him.
Yeah.
We watched him get T-boned by a car, broke his femur, all this stuff, went to the hospital, yada, yada, yada. I was in the ER. The nurse was great. Let me participate to give me something to do, because I was just a bundle of nerves.
Yeah.
And by the time, backup showed up because I think you went off to go get people, and I was like, I'll stay.
Yeah, and remember, this was like at 1 a.m. or something.
Yeah, no, 3 in the morning.
Two in the morning when the accident happened. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
So I was at the hospital until, I think, 5.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, you have
eight.
Also, comrade, you have a lot of childhood trauma.
So much.
So, so and by the way, that trauma also influences
how we respond to future
trauma. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. But you know, growing,
well, one of them is not telling anybody anything.
Correct.
Growing up, if this were me in that situation, I would just take the Zier. I'd be sorry I had it done, but I got stuck in the thing. I know you don't take late paper. You want to see it anyway, and here you go. Yeah. I'm happy with the Zero. It's my, you know.
Yeah, same.
I would just absolutely own it if I did it.
And my favorite is go ahead.
And I back when you didn't have computers and I was in college, yeah. I like pulled all-nighters typing up papers to get them done because you had to turn them in the next day, not ever thinking, oh, I'll go to bed and make them an excuse.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, sorry to interrupt. It's just this is reminding me of things.
The trauma.
No, this isn't trauma. This is just me learning that online college wasn't for me. I misread the syllabus about when the midterm was due because it said 12 o'clock. And I thought, oh, midnight. No. It was due at noon.
Yeah.
So I logged on at 1 o'clock in the afternoon to do it. And I was like, nope. I'm like, oh, shit. So I failed that class.
Yeah. But that's why I put all my stuff in military time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was 12 p.m. And my brain was like midnight.
No. That's why I always put things in military time. And also my classes, I do a very important thing. I say, look, my stuff is due at 11 p.m. And they go, well, why not 11:59? Why not just before midnight? I'm like, hi. Every piece of time is arbitrary.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I could make it 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
I could make it 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Absolutely.
I could make it 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I could make it 6 in the morning.
3:49 and 30 seconds. Yeah.
I'm telling you this 3 months in advance.
I'm telling you this on the first day of classes in writing. All assignments will be due on Thursday at 11 p.m.
Yeah, perfect.
I had someone today who
that
wrote
one
me.
1 hour should not matter.
And it shouldn't. And I had someone write me and it's like, hey, professor, really sorry. And they were it was 15 minutes late on the thing. Hey, professor, I'm really sorry. I thought it was due at 11:59 like all my other classes. I just wrote back the simple statement. The time was posted and always has been for this course. Because, look, we're 12 weeks in.
Right.
All right. We're 3/4 of the way through the damn class.
Right.
It always has been 11 p.m. And
you're not
again,
new here.
These are little. And my favorite is when it's like a scaffolding assignment that counts for like nothing on their grade. Yeah. And they go like, oh, no, I have to get this. You're an asshole. Blah, blah, blah. Like, buddy,
pick your battles, bud.
Buddy, pick your battles. This is like this literally is one of the assignments that gets dropped.
Nice.
You know, it doesn't even count. You don't even notice. It's something that, there's 20 of these in the semester or 12 of these in the semester.
Sure.
One of them gets dropped.
Yep.
Yeah. And so it doesn't even matter. But the trauma response is so strong to getting a zero that they don't want to do that. And when we look at what's going on in our current government, we have a lot of people who are hugely influenced by trauma.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Pete Kegstand. Kegstand. You know, Secretary of Defense Kegstand.
Secretary of the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, Secretary of the Eiffel Tower. No, that's Brent Kavanaugh.
That's
Brent Kavanaugh.
That's the other alcoholic.
He's Justice Eiffel Tower.
Yeah. Justice Towers. Justice Eiffel.
anyway.
Yeah. But they're all so his trauma. I mean, the man's on what, his third wife, and he's cheated on all of them.
Including this one, and
while he was in his confirmation hearing, one of the Democratic senators goes, you know, blah blah blah. Didn't you, you know, have sex with your producer while you were this? And he goes, sir, my child is here.
Yep.
With my wife, and he goes,
which one?
No. And he goes, wasn't that the one you got pregnant when you were married to the other woman?
Yeah, get him.
And he got all huffy and he crossed his arms. He got all mad.
So,
and that's an anger response to you found out my secret, which is a totally open secret.
So, no, I was going to ask, is that does that fall anywhere on the trauma spectrum? Because I don't see how it could.
It, so
he's traumatized other people.
But his behavior around women is trauma.
Yeah.
It's a response trauma, or he is traumatizing them?
Well, both.
Okay. No. His trauma is being found out not to be the person that he is.
He's supposed to be. Well, but yeah, I mean, I don't know what his trauma is.
He puts himself forward as this perfect, strong alpha male. But
that's just his insecurity.
Yeah, and that's all his
trauma.
Is it something
caused this severe insecurity where he has to be the most masculine man around?
Right. And womanizing comes from things like being a child of divorce. Yeah. Because you see that your mother was, you know, you were raised by your mother because your father was out catting around, or, you know, all these different things that you're told. Mm-hmm. My favorite one was when my mother told me, well, your father divorced me and he left me with nothing. And I'm like, and then my dad was like, oh no, the paperwork is in my safety deposit box. Your mother divorced me and started dating some realtor, and he gave her hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy homes and work. And he did it through her being a real estate agent and him being a developer. And I'm like, and so when my father passed and my sister and I went into the safety deposit box, there are the divorce papers. My mother didn't like the fact that she was then found out.
Yeah. Hey,
you know, she was very angry with us that we would believe that lie. So it's like, Mom, these are papers that literally say that you did this. Yeah.
So I've long thought that part of our early childhood education system should include how to recognize your trauma, right?
Yeah.
How to deal with your issues.
Well,
and art.
Yeah.
And you know, you need some fundamentals. Outlets. You need to know how to write, right? Yeah. And you know how to read, right, and comprehend, and you need to know some math. And you need to know science. That seems to be exceptionally important these days. But you also need to know how to take care of your own mental health.
Yeah.
And how to help or interact with other people. And we don't teach that. We kids go out in the playground and beat each other up and say, well, so you learned something, didn't you, son?
No, but I think there is something to be said for allowing the id of children to interact when they're young enough that they're all made of rubber.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that don't allow that, but also
I think that
I'm not saying that's the only way either.
Help them recognize their traumas.
I think it would be better if we had educators that were paid well enough and trained well enough.
Oh, yeah. You have to
understand trauma. In the first place,
it's like anything else that's broken in America, and let's face it, almost everything is.
It is every single thing. Every institution we have is broken.
You can't do one thing without first shoring up a bunch of other things.
Correct.
Right.
Like there are solutions to the homeless problem.
Oh yeah.
But you can't do those solutions to the homeless problem unless you also fix the healthcare problem.
Yep.
Right.
Right, so you've got to fix that problem before you can really fix the other problem.
And we need to add eyes, teeth, and the brain to healthcare.
What is this, a Kesha costume?
No, you add teeth to it, then it's a Kesha costume. Yeah, thousands of teeth.
That's a weird, bizarre story for the second half.
It's a cool story.
I already thought she was cool. I didn't need the hard sell. Anyway,
she's an astronaut.
Hey, Kesha. You're thinking of Katy Perry.
Oh, wrong one. I get those two confused all the time.
That's fine. One of them's cool. One of them's Katy Perry.
Yeah. Yeah. But just, and it was very. I enjoyed the fact that I was in a room, and my aspect was, no, we have to set boundaries and we have to be very clear at what they are and don't bend.
Right.
Because when you bend, that actually creates another trauma response.
Sure.
And people are like, what?
Instability.
Most of the time when children of divorce, the reason, one of the things that they get is that insecurity of not knowing what the decision's going to be, and knowing that if they go from one to the other, from mom to dad or dad to mom, that they can get the way they want to be.
Right.
And so when you have people that happens with, you're enabling their trauma to remain.
And the trauma, you know, when people think of trauma, they think of like, you know, I got mugged. That's trauma. Yeah, right. But trauma's can be small.
Yeah.
And like in parenting, if you ever took an actual parent class, but again, one of the things that's broken in this country.
Yeah, you need a license to get a firearm, but you can you can have 1,200. You can have 19 children.
They'll let any asshole become a father.
Accidentally bought a gun?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, I haven't accidentally had a baby either.
Yeah. I can't say that.
Baron.
Baron.
No,
that was absolutely deliberate.
That was on
deliberate.
Purpose. Yeah,
Baron
yeah.
was deliberate.
As a parent, if you give your child an ultimatum, clean up your room or you get a spanking.
Yeah.
And then they don't clean up your room and you don't give them the spanking.
Now they're confused.
Now they have learned.
Yeah.
I don't have to do that. That threat is not valid.
Which makes honestly what that does in my mind is it makes the inconsistent follow through creates a traumatic response, which I don't know what I'm going to get regardless of my behavior.
That's the other side, the hysterical disorder mothers and fathers, narcissistic fathers. Sure. So hysterical, and it's two different ones.
And what you learn in like parenting classes, don't make those ultimatums. Don't make ultimatums you can't go. Right. Pull through with, right?
Yeah.
You clean up your room or you can't go outside to play. Mm-hmm. That's
very easy to do.
But you clean up your room or I'm going to beat you to death. That's a really hard
one.
And that's going to traumatize your child.
Yep. Yeah. And then I would be the child, be like, hey, I'm still alive. Yeah. Hit me one more time. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Bring it up.
So you've got to choose your battles and be adult in the room, not angry at your child.
Yeah, be the guiding force.
Because then kids learn, I don't have to do what I'm told.
But look at our current administration again. I love to bring it around to the administration.
But once they learn they don't have to do what they're told, then they go into the revolutionaries class and find out, oh, no, I do have to do what I'm
consequences.
Told. How can I do that? I've never had to do what I'm told anyway.
But the instructor is the asshole because he's enforcing rules.
Right.
Yeah.
Shouldn't
they
be doing
that. They end up loving me. because
they need structure.
Yeah, I'm the parent that will always follow through.
Yeah.
Because
it's weird
and if
how
you
that
look,
garners
well,
respect.
And if you look at my daughter, who's married to a doctor, I love to point that one out. She, you know, she is another.
How tall is he?
No, jockey size.
My daughter's married to a guy with a doctorate. Well, not married, I guess.
I don't get to make short jokes about anybody. Okay,
actually, he's a little guy.
Yeah.
He's got little hands and just slight shoulders. Yeah, he's a little guy. Sorry, it's from Portlandia.
I know. Just a little guy.
I'm just a little guy.
Just a little guy.
But it's really important to remember. It's hard when you see someone. It's like, wow, you were never parented.
Yeah, no kidding.
And
yeah.
Now I tell them right up front the first week of classes, and it's one of my favorite things. And I get laughs, and I love getting laughs. Uh-huh. It's one of the reasons why I do it. But I'm like,
you're
look,
about to learn.
No, I'm like, look, I'm not your father, so don't hold anything against me about what you have with your father against me.
There you go.
I'm also not your daddy. So don't treat me like that either.
Right.
Okay. But I am a person who's going to follow through with every threat that he ever makes.
There you go.
But you can call him daddy if you want.
Sure. So it's interesting because something I've been dealing with at work is finding a way to communicate with presumed adults.
You're doing coaching is what your problem is what your issue is.
What do you mean?
You have to in order for things to go smoothly in your shop.
Yeah.
You have to coach the others.
Right.
Who are
part of the problem.
Yeah, who are less experienced than you are at times, the new guys in the shop.
Yep.
At least at what they do in the shop, in your shop, because you've been there long enough.
Right.
And you're sitting there, you're trying to coach them, and in a way you might want to mentor them a little bit.
Sure.
But in the end, you want to be an advisor.
Yeah.
You just want to step back and go, no.
Basically.
Yeah. Not, hey, buddy. Let me help you do that. Let me tell you what to do right.
Well, so
instead of just don't do that.
That's one of the things.
Advisor says no. It says no, don't do that.
Right.
Coach says, hey, don't do it that way.
Right.
And mentor says, let me show you the best way to do that.
So I'm the coach then. Because
the coach.
Because what one thing I will never do when I'm in a teaching setting of any sort, instructing, whatever, it doesn't matter. Whenever I'm teaching somebody anything, I'll never tell you the answer.
Right. Oh,
I will never give you the answer. Yeah. Everybody gets so mad.
Oh, yeah.
So mad.
Yeah.
Like this kid, who I was telling him before we got on mics, failed to read a tape measure and screwed up some product.
Yeah,
whatever.
Well, he just did centimeters instead of inches.
Yeah. So look, it's an honest mistake.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, it truly is.
I measured 3 on the tape. I assumed it was inches.
there was a moment where I was like, I was walking somebody through how to make measurements. And it, and again, it's literally just counting. Just count the damn line. It's not hard. But I was like,
but there's so many lines on it.
Okay.
There's the lines between 2 and 3 and the lines between 3 and 4. And they're the same damn lines.
Not to digress too far here. We were using a speed square.
Right? I know what that is.
And I was like, wrong orientation. Wrong orientation.
That happened in Supreme Court this year.
There's only 3 ways to hold the damn thing on a flat surface. Yes. He wouldn't get it right. And he's just looking at me like, what are you talking about? I've used this every way I can. I'm like, no, you haven't. Use your brain. And like, you know, it's, but part of it that I personally run into is language.
Yeah.
I have an unfortunate
vocabulary.
Yes, I have an unfortunate vocabulary.
You do.
It's quite elevated. Yeah. Not on purpose. I just like using the least amount of words possible.
Well, sir, you're a learned human.
Yeah.
And you have words.
I have many words.
And unlike Jane Cobb,
right.
I have words.
Yeah. You know?
Unlike Jane Cobb, you have many of them and you know the words to use, but unfortunately you use the words and they don't understand word means.
But apparently,
yeah,
the only other mode of communication I have outside of a heightened language peer is adult to child.
Yeah.
And I don't know
that's a trauma response.
Yeah. That makes sense.
That is a trauma response.
It's on me. Yeah. I know that one's on me, and I don't know how to make it better.
No. There's nothing. But again, when a person is not listening to you and they are acting as a child.
Right.
Or they're acting as a person that has no ability to learn anything.
Or no desire.
The only thing you do is like, well, I'm going to explain this to you like you're a four-year-old. Uh-huh. And so, no, pick that up. No, not that. No, no, not that. Not that either. Okay, I'm going to point to the... can I touch you?
Bap.
Bap. Yeah.
But so what I have learned, though, is in doing this, any future forms of communication that are constructive are gone.
Yeah.
They now feel like you don't respect them, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
It's like, I mean, I don't, but when you behave like a 4-year-old in a shop where you can literally die,
but in a but see, this is the thing in what they call blue collar jobs, right? The jobs where you're doing fabrication and mechanics and
physical labor.
My personal favorite one is the fact that that the vocabulary eventually falls down to listen, bitch tits. This is what you need to do.
Right.
I
don't have that.
And you don't because you have the self-respect that you have elevated this to a profession.
Yeah.
Instead of it being, you know,
just a bunch of grunts with a hammer.
A bunch of grunts with a hammer. Yeah. Exactly. And so you're being a professional because you had a white collar job.
Many years.
For too long.
20 years.
For too long. Yeah.
You had a white, 20 years.
No, 15 years. 15 years. Yeah. For too long. You had a too long on that one.
I did.
You know, so again, that's a traumatic experience.
Sure.
Working in white collar too long.
No, that was genuinely that. Like the apartment management was.
And when someone starts to say damage. Things like, hey, can we circle back around and talk? No.
Hey, come with me to the office.
Yeah.
I still, to this day, I get a jump. Like a little, because that was always something bad is going to happen.
Hey, can I borrow you for a minute? No.
Yep.
No. My answer is always no. So they're like, hey, can I borrow you? No. And they're like, I'm sorry, what? I'm like, no. I did that once, and there was a sheriff sitting in that office, and I was thrown out of my own company. And we're not, you can say any other words but those. and you should know this by now because we've been working together long enough.
Oh, yeah.
And I've told this story more than 2 times to you.
This joke is well dead because it goes back to when the comrade was talking about his enlarged vocabulary.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say I prefer to eschew verbiage.
Oh, nice. Yes.
Because, you know, I don't like vocabulary.
No, it's a thing.
Yeah.
And
so when you look at people who are currently in our administration, I mean, this week we had, I mean, a few weeks ago we lost Christine Ohm, that bird-legged hoe.
The bird-legged hoe.
And then
Christy Ho, that bird-legged gnome?
That's the one. Mm. And then this week, our Attorney General, Pamela Bondi.
Mm-hmm. My name is Bondi.
Bondi. Pamela Bondi.
Yeah. Pamela Joe Bondi.
Pamela Joe Bondi. Oh.
Pamela Joe disbarred Bondi. Yeah. Bondi. Yeah.
Yeah. She's given it, by the way, she's not fired.
Right.
I want to point out the president did not fire Kristi Noem. He made her Shield Maiden of the Americas.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
And Shield Maiden. And there is a new idea. There's a new job for Pam Bondi.
She's got a private sector job waiting for her.
No.
I could have sworn
he removed her from the position she was in as Attorney General.
Yes.
And she has another position with a title somewhere else in the administration.
No, it's private sector.
So for him.
Well, probably, but it's probably a government contractor.
I know she was the mill is she was fired, which means she doesn't have a job. If she was hired into some other, you know, Shield Sword Maiden of the Americas,
of the Epsteins,
from the BBC quote, Trump praised her in a post on Truth Social and said she would be transitioning to a role in the private sector.
Okay, so. So he didn't.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. So the point is that he's like, you're not the Attorney General any longer. Yeah. We're going to bring up the guy who is behind you temporarily, Todd
Blanche.
You know, the whitest guy in the room.
Yeah.
And he's going to be AG for a while. Now, the problem is there is an outstanding warrant. Sorry, not a warrant. There's a
subpoena
for it's kind of the same
Pamela
thing.
Joe.
Yeah. Come on. A warrant for your arrest and a subpoena are kind of the same thing.
Yeah. One leads to the other.
Yeah. One leads to the other. Yeah.
Can I borrow you for a minute?
By the way, whenever someone says that, I swear to you, I get a violent response because by the way, the deputy sheriff had to hold me from kicking that guy's ass.
I believe it.
Because he had no right to take my business from me that he was not, that he was an investor in name only.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Oh no. Wow. It failed 6 months later. Shocking. By the way, every business I've ever been removed from or left has all failed within 6 months after I leave.
I would imagine you tend to be the backbone of most of those.
The spine, the ribs, the legs, the arms. Yeah. All of it. Yeah. The sympathetic nervous system. No, he was the liver. He would go out and take clients out for lunch and drink like three wild turkeys.
Three martini
Cokes.
Lunch.
Three wild turkey and Cokes and then try and get them to sign contracts. I'm like, dude, you can't do that.
I mean, you can.
No, you can't.
They're not enforceable.
They're not enforceable, yeah. it's terrible. Yeah. The 90s.
No, but we're, you know, like talking about things you can do that aren't technically legal.
Yeah.
The entire administration, right? Everything they're doing, they can do.
So Pam Bondi right now, so that subpoena she is under... Maxwell Alejandro Frost, who's on that committee, said, look, private sector, public sector, whatever she does, she has to come in and say what she knows about Epstein.
Yeah.
She has never fulfilled that subpoena, which she tried to do a few weeks ago by going in and having a closed door meeting.
But not under oath.
But not under oath. And it's like, no.
Having a little powwow. Let's have a powwow instead of a subpoena.
Yeah.
Spin it on the record.
And she can't hide from it now, saying she's way too busy with the Justice Department. Correct. We got to schedule that.
No, I'm the Attorney
October.
General.
So obviously the president stated that he fired her because of her handling of the Epstein files, but also apparently this is through the grapevine, but the rumor is it's because she did not expedite charges against political enemies.
Oh, but she tried.
She tried.
No, she did, and they all got thrown out.
Yeah.
So I
think she got fired because she released when they were trying to do the whatever the Arctic Frost or whatever the investigate trying to frame Biden for the investigation into Trump.
Oh yeah,
right. They did that Russia investigation.
Oh,
that's called Arctic Frost. They released a bunch of documents trying to show how corrupt it was, but they also in that released some documents from. Jack, what's his name?
Yeah. Smith.
Jack Smith for the things that are now not supposed to be out, and they were very derogatory to Trump.
Uh-oh.
And that's why she, 2 days later, she's fired.
Got it. Yeah.
That's got to be why she's fired.
That makes sense. Because it's usually a very direct line of cause and effect.
He can't say, oh, she released this shit that's bad about me, so yeah, you did this other thing sloppily.
Is that the stuff corroborating the rape of the 13-year-old?
No, that's basically motive behind why Trump stole the documents.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and put him in his house.
Put him in his house.
For financial gain.
For his own personal financial gain to blackmail and maybe sell.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially if he didn't win.
Yeah. And here's another fun thing. So... Notice he's only firing women?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we all know that Trump only beats women. That's literally,
he can only beat women.
That's the only thing he can do. And no matter what he does, it's not working out. And so on, was it Tuesday or Wednesday that he gave his speech to America?
It was
Tuesday night.
I remember 20 minutes. I remember we were watching.
I didn't watch it, but it was a waste of 20 minutes no matter what you were doing.
No, it was 19 minutes anyway. He didn't even make 20. Don't worry. Weak. 20 will get to 30 in very soon. 13 will get you 20.
15
will get you 20. No, we were watching The Mummy, the third one. What was that? The Dragon Emperor. The one where Rachel Weisz wasn't in it with Brendan Fraser. Do you remember that one?
I only saw the first one.
Oh,
I saw the first and second. I didn't see the third one.
I did unfortunately see The Scorpion King.
Some of the worst graphics ever.
Awful.
But they did capture the Rock sneer very well.
Yeah, in the
plastic model of that guy. No, this had Jet Li in it as a the woman who played in Star Trek, Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah,
and Michelle
Yeoh.
She had Michelle Yeoh in there too. But it was really good. And I was like, oh, the president's speaking. Mm-hmm. During that speech, which was supposed to be about Iraq, same thing. It's a repeat.
It's four letters with an I. What do you want? We're Americans.
No. It's a repeat.
You guys are.
No. It's a repeat. Uh-huh. Of the Bush administration, so it doesn't really matter what country we're actually attacking.
Fair credit to the Bush admin.
Yeah,
not a single one of those in the Epstein files. They just did it for the love of the game.
They did. They really did. Yeah. But here we are. Here he was talking about Iran, right? Here he was talking about Iran.
Yeah.
And every statement he made was 100% a lie.
Yeah. Of course.
This will be done. And by the way, have you ever noticed how many times he says it's going to be 2 weeks?
Yeah, that's his code for it. I don't know.
Far enough away.
He established that year one of term one.
Infrastructure week.
Yeah.
2 weeks. We're going to start infrastructure week. Yeah. We'll have that medical plan out in 2 weeks. Obama replacement.
That's so much better than Obama that you'll never understand.
Yeah.
But what he did say during that speech is that we don't have time or the money to do daycare or Medicare or Medicaid or any of those things.
Right.
We just don't have it because we're doing war.
Right. Yeah. We're too busy.
All the federal government needs to do is war. That's all it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then Marco Rubio, were you going there?
It was the day before. Yeah.
Marco Rubio is the next day.
It was the next day. Oh, yeah. 31st. Yeah. The very next day, Marco Rubio says,
imagine how good Iran could be if they didn't spend all their money on bombs and weapons of war and instead invested in their people.
I'm going to say two words in sequence that the Trump administration has never heard.
Reflection.
Yes, please.
Oh,
but
yes,
also,
please.
but also,
I got consent. Oh, that's three words.
Proofreader.
Yeah.
Public relations.
Yeah, public relations. Yeah.
She consented. Those are the two words. Those are the two words. Yeah.
I just one word.
Yes.
Or two words. You're competent. They've never heard that.
So, to me, what I thought was the most striking thing about his address to the people was that his people were at least savvy enough to recognize that they needed to put it later in the day on Tuesday for reasons we'll talk about later. It's positive reasons. But more importantly, if you watch the stock market and their reaction, all day everybody was like, oh, Iran, like there was news in the beat that Iran was open to peace talks. The president's going to make an address to the nation. Here we go. Stocks going up. And then he just says the same shit he's been saying for a month. And all the stocks went, oh, shit. Boom.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and there was that bet on the poly market.
Of course.
That we're going to do the ground invasion.
Uh-huh.
$800,000.
Yeah.
Bet on a ground invasion.
By when is the question?
I don't remember what the date was, but it was placed before his speech.
Really?
It was placed like 5 hours before his speech.
Did he say boots on the ground in the speech? Okay, I didn't think so. But there's also a lot of troop movement happening right now.
This was so terribly planned. I'm sorry. The word plan.
Yeah.
The word plan. Just push it. This was
vibe board.
Yeah,
vibe
board.
We're doing vibe wars.
Yeah. this was so terribly this was so terribly executed. I'm just gonna say executed. It's an excursion, so it's not a war.
Poorly
so.
Executed.
This is the poorly executed excursion. It was so poorly executed that we didn't even move weaponry or troops or boats.
We weren't ready.
We moved some planes around.
We put a couple of aircraft carriers over there.
They were already there.
One was we moved one from the from a long way away.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But the problem is, to do troops, that's what we call Marines.
Yeah.
Marines go in and secure the ground, and then we put the army on the ground.
Right.
That's what we do. That's how this works. Tell me you don't know how the military works without telling me how the military works. I'll go first, Pete Hegseth. You didn't move the Marines anywhere close by.
You
should have put the Marines in somewhere. Egypt, Dubai, Oman, somewhere. Put them on the ground there. A couple of thousand Marines.
They won't do that, though.
I can tell you.
Well, they didn't do it.
So on every aircraft carrier, there's a contingent of Marines.
Very small contingents.
And they're probably saying, well, we got a couple of those. We'll just use those people.
Well, right? Because they don't think one Marine is worth an entire battalion of the Navy. Entire fleet group.
The going theory is the idea. Now, bear with me on the.
Was it a concept of a plan?
Yeah. We have concepts of a plan.
Okay. No.
The concepts of a plan involve.
It was a wet dream of a plan.
Involve boots on the ground. To build an airstrip.
Oh yeah, this one.
To steal Iran's uranium. So we stole Venezuela's president and eventually their oil maybe.
Sure.
We're going to steal Iran's uranium by putting a bunch of Marines in Iran and then building an airstrip.
Here's what I think they're going to do.
They had airships. No. Strips. That's the funny part.
Here's what I think. Honest to God, this is what I think he's going to do. He is going to drop a tactical nuke on the site where the uranium is and try to blow it up.
There is a call sheet bet on that. So,
I don't know. That's my thing.
That was just a public vet.
I'm sorry. You already had that he would nuke on 3/13 the day you got the shotgun.
Yeah.
You said America would use a nuke.
Yeah. And I'm just saying now specifically where they're going to use it.
We haven't said when yet.
I will update the betting dollar.
Yeah.
You said where are they going to drop it on?
They're going to because it's the plan that the comrade was talking about. They're going to send in people. They're going to send in excavating equipment into the middle of Iran's mountains and create an airstrip in the mountains as they dig into the tunnel in the base where the uranium is,
sir.
And so they can get 1,000 pounds of uranium, highly enriched uranium, out and in an airplane, and they probably said, dude, let's just drop a nuke and it'll be easy.
But if I recall, the IAEA specifically stated that Iran does not have weaponized uranium.
It's 20% enriched.
Yeah, it's not enough.
So I just want to point out, this is the new betting dollar, and I'm going to update the date to 4/3 because, why the hell
record
not,
keeping.
Right? That was 2025 you did that. Oh wow, that was last year. No, it was 2026. I put the wrong number on there. It says Canadian says American nuke on Iranian uranium. Say that four times. Rev still says no. I says no.
Here's why I say that.
Yeah.
The president wants to use a nuke. He is fascinated with nukes. Mm-hmm. And
I think he should be right next to it when it goes off, so we can see what it looks like. Because I have heard they're beautiful. I personally think he needs to do the
No, I've just forgotten the movie. The Doctor Strangelove thing and ride the nuke down.
Slim Pickens that shit.
I just want to feel the power.
Feel the power between my thighs.
He wants to use a nuke to show how manly he is.
So
Hegseth wants to use a nuke to show how manly he is.
Yeah.
They don't really want to use a nuke to destroy cities because that's bad. But you use a nuke to drill a big hole and blow up some nuclear shit already? What the hell? That's a win. So I'm not saying that that's good. I'm saying that's how they're thinking.
It's a way to
I am knee deep in the Behind the Bastard series on nukes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's right so now. Good. All for the five of them?
And yeah, so I'm, so on, good. I'm on three.
And
you can't sleep at night for a while.
No. Yeah. I've known about this for
well.
A long time.
I slept very well. I cried in a museum.
I am thoroughly unbothered by existential threats because I have no say in the matter.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing is like in about half an hour the whole world could be dead. Okay.
15 minutes.
Yeah. You know, cool, beer.
As long
whatever.
As it's not just me.
Yeah. So but what I think it was is interesting though is what kind of drove the philosophy that drove the nuclear proliferation
right.
in America.
Right.
And Donald Trump is a direct reflection of that generation of thinking, right? Because he grew up in the Cold War. He grew up hearing nothing but the only way to ensure our safety is to threaten everybody with a gun to the head, right?
Which is why he doesn't want Iran to have nukes because then they've got a gun too.
Right.
But remember, he was raised by cowards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His grandfather was a coward and a pimp. His father took the money from a coward and a pimp and then... And then became a slumlord, mm-hmm. ruling over people who had nowhere else to go.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then he passed that on to his son and said, here's some money, buddy.
Good luck.
Yeah. You're bankrupted casinos.
And go bankrupt a casino, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that said, right? Like,
it's all trauma.
Yeah.
I tell you, it's all trauma.
It's trauma all the way down.
It's all trauma.
It's a big trauma tower.
Trauma dump.
The Eiffel trauma.
Hey, but Donald Trump's trauma tower is the tallest one in New York.
Donald Trump's trauma
right
dump.
After 9/11.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. Oh, no, he took a trauma dump in the Supreme Court this week.
So anyway... reflecting on what they're talking about and reflecting on this thing, I because he mentioned at one point, the host of Behind the Bastards mentioned at one point that there was an idea that people were floating of using one of the atomic bombs against Japan instead of on a population center, a demonstration in a non-populated area that would leave, you know, devastation in its wake in a place where less people would be harmed, but everyone would know, right? And again, none of it was necessary. We didn't need to do it. Japan had already lost. It was over.
Yeah.
But, you know, they'd already built the damn things. And they wanted to, basically, they wanted to scare.
They were scaring Russia.
They wanted to scare Russia.
Yeah.
So that said, I think it's the whole Trump wants to use nukes thing. I think it's not about I need to prove that I'm the biggest and the manliest. I think it's about fear. Right? That same Cold War fear, that fear that somebody I don't have any control over might have a weapon I can't stop.
Right.
And in that vein, Chris Valenti, who we all know from social media, he's an interesting guy. I don't agree with everything he says, but he's certainly a character.
I had to stop following because
he went down
a couple of holes that were like, dude.
That's what he gets a little wacky sometimes. Yeah. It is what it is.
You don't want to go down a wacky hole.
He gets a little conspiracy theorist in a way that I can't go with him. But he made an interesting point that I don't dismiss out of hand, which is if any nation has nukes, all nations should have nukes. The idea being, right, if we're going to go with this mutually assured destruction thing, let's go ahead and eliminate the elite nuclear powers and give it to everybody, right?
Yeah.
Now, obviously, that's a bit untenable, but, you know, it's the same idea of, like...
It's the same idea of if one person has a gun that they can carry, everybody has to now carry a gun with them at all times.
At all times. Well, yeah, but it falls on the fallacy that you hear a lot from right-wing gun nuts, which is an armed populace is a polite populace, which is asinine.
It's not.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
The Wild West
as shown by the quadriplegic guy who shot a guy in the car.
I know.
That's insane,
it's self-defense,
right?
Allegedly. Hey. No, he's not quadriplegic. He has no hands or feet.
Yeah, he's amputee. Quite
he was driving his car with three people in the car with him, shot the guy in the passenger seat in self-defense, and then dumped the dude's body in someone's yard with no hands and no feet.
Hey, he's a cornhole champion.
He was driving a car.
And I want to point out, I would also like to point out, That man is a champion.
He's a champion. He's incredible. The man is, in a weird way, a hero. Yeah.
but when you read the headline, you're like, oh,
it's
this
like
sounds like
the onion
or the click hole.
Yeah.
Man with no limbs who wins a cornhole shot a dude in self defense
while driving
his car.
Yeah. But when you look at
best Uber I've ever had.
But this past week, Tulsi Gabbard was pulled in front. Our head of
She exists.
Intelligence,
head of witchcraft.
Our head of it. Well, she's the.
No. We don't knock our witchy brethren.
She's the.
I just said she was the head of witchcraft. Yeah.
Her entire title is something like intelligence, right? It's about.
Yeah, it's the director of national intelligence.
Yeah,
and they asked her. She was pulled in front of Congress, and they said, "Hey, what was the status of? So was Iran's nuclear program utterly destroyed, according to your report?
This was last week, wasn't it?
It was last week.
Yeah.
But it's really funny because
it's hilarious.
It's really funny because she goes, yes. And he goes, okay, so there was no danger from Iran having a nuke. No, there was not. So
yeah.
and then she goes, when Donald Trump attacked Iran for having the possibility of a nuke any day now, is that true?
The hang up was on the definition of the phrase imminent threat.
Were they imminent threat?
The Dow was over 50,000.
No, that was Bondi.
I'm just saying it's a good comeback, no matter where you are.
No, her out was, well, it's the president's job to decide what an imminent threat is.
It is absolutely not.
And then he goes, so in your job description, it is threat assessment.
Yeah.
What part of that is not imminent threat?
Yeah.
Also, you made a statement at the beginning of this hearing that stated, not an imminent threat.
Yeah.
What is it?
Yeah.
And she just had no answer. It was Ossoff from Georgia.
Right, Ossoff. Yeah. But here we still sit that our government, our Congress, did not vote to stop this war, stop this action. They said, well, it hasn't raised itself to the level of something that we have to deal with, which, based on that simple piece of information, that should be all the information you need. You didn't listen to your director of intelligence. All you did is you went in and who gave you the information to say that Iran was doing this?
No, nobody.
Was it?
Yeah.
No, Israel did. It was. I'll tell you right now. It was Bibi Netanyahu who said we should do war.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Donald Trump goes, well, I don't want to do war. And he goes, but you could get all of Iran's oil.
Yeah.
So hey, I'm going to need you to take a look at this document and tell me what you think, and then we're going to do some war.
Yeah. Oh. Mm.
Yeah.
Or not even that.
How about these pictures?
No,
then we're going to do some war.
Not even that. And I'm telling you, he doesn't even have to blackmail Donald Trump. All he can say is, you could get all of Iran's oil.
Yeah. True.
Yeah, you can have the oil. We're just going to take them out.
You just did this with Venezuela. You can do it with Iran, too.
Yeah.
They're going to be a pushover.
Yep.
We're just and then, work
then,
with
then
us.
Then once you've got all that oil, you can get Mexico's oil, and you have a whole market.
Right. Hey, by the way, they don't have Brent crude in Venezuela. They do have it in Iran. It's British Petroleum, too. Just to let you know. I listened to that one the other day, the Shahs of Iran. It was a good one.
Yeah.
But it's really important to remember, we're now doing things. So on the first evening of the excursion that the president is on right now. Remember, he calls it an excursion.
Yeah, it's not a war. You can't call it that because people get mad at me.
No, because they got
the RVs out there.
No,
it's an excursion.
He said that it was that it might be illegal if I called it that. That's what he said. Yeah.
He's trying to do his cute tongue-in-cheek thing.
Yeah.
When nobody likes him and the jokes aren't funny anymore.
Yeah.
Right? It's wild.
100% true. So on the first night, an accident occurred based on old intelligence Tulsi Gabbard that was pushed forward by Palantir.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and their threat assessment software.
Mm-hmm.
And we bombed a school, not once, not twice, three times.
Precision.
So here's what we did. We hit a building in the school. Mm-hmm. They all moved into another building, and paramedics and other individuals came to assist, along with military. And then we bombed it again.
That's the Israeli strategy.
Yeah.
No, it's called
the Russian strategy.
It's
too.
Terrorism is what it is.
Well, yeah.
It's exactly what was done by the Saudis when they hit the Twin Towers.
Yeah.
All right. So remember,
no,
19 of 20 people on those planes were Saudi.
What I'm saying, it's not that. Because that's a little different.
It's a very common tactic.
Yeah.
I mean,
the sniper that shoots to wound, then takes out the squad.
Takes out the squad that comes to get them. Yeah, exactly.
That's what they did in Syria.
Hey, and by the way, it's against all modes of warfare.
Yes.
Everything. Geneva Convention, this compact, that compact. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Do you mean the Geneva checklist?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Canadian, calm down.
Calm down, Canadian. We know what the checklist, you know, you guys are. Oh, wait, can we do this?
They invented the Geneva
checklist.
They
did. They absolutely did.
Canada went so hard in World War One. That's why their motto became sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Oh.
Well, you just don't want to make us angry.
Yeah. You wouldn't like him when you're
angry. Do you know what my favorite wartime invention of Canada was? The iceberg aircraft carrier.
Yeah, the one made out of
One made out of ice.
They mixed wood and water
and
froze it into blocks of ice to make an aircraft carrier.
Yeah. It's called
ingenuity.
Parkrete.
Yeah, basically.
Parkrete.
Yeah. And it worked.
Yeah.
They couldn't bring it into, you know, warm waters, but it worked.
Yeah. It works during winter. But the point is that we did that. The American military did that. And when it was like, oh, we just had bad intelligence. Buddy.
Bullshit.
You did it the first time. Then you could have gathered intelligence, but then you did it again.
Bullshit.
And then you did it a third time.
Look,
this was not an accident.
Okay, look. When we illegally assassinated the general of Iran, what was it? The first
in
term?
Trump's first term. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what kind of munition we used to do that?
It was a Tomahawk missile, wasn't
it? No.
Drone?
It was a Hellfire.
Hellfire missile.
But
yeah.
It was a Hellfire with no explosives.
Right.
We specifically
Swords on it.
We put swords on a Hellfire missile because we knew where he was, when he was there, and we knew we didn't need to blow up the city block to do it.
Right.
We have the capacity to know when the Ayatollah is picking his nose and put a bomb firmly up his ass.
With a bunch of swords.
There's no reason at all to hit any civilian target ever. Yeah.
So now we're bombing their bridges.
Well, it is Palantir using some sort of bad AI to figure things out. So that makes sense.
But who should be talking about this?
Oh,
Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah.
Right.
Our director of intelligence, but she is, and we know this very clearly, an agent of Israel.
Yeah.
I thought it was Russia.
And Russia,
but she Israel wanted, first
it's same
and
party,
foremost.
Right?
Yeah, same, yeah. 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 And by us doing this right now, we have lost so many. So all of our allies have basically opened the book and gone, I'm sorry, no. So Spain says no flyovers. France says no flyovers.
No airbases.
Austria said today no flyovers.
Austria said no flyovers. The UK said no bases.
Yeah.
Poland said you want what?
Yeah.
No.
No.
They said we need some Patriot missiles. You need to give those to Israel defenders.
Absolutely not.
No, those are for us. You gave us those to say
Russia might win against Ukraine.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Because you're not doing your job.
Right.
Yeah. And then so our NATO allies are all one by one going, look, man, this wasn't our war. And by the way, when he says and Donald Trump made the statement, well, maybe they should, if they want the oil, they should go get it themselves.
Yeah.
If they want this, because if we get it, it's going to be ours.
Yeah. By the way, he dropped the same logic he did for COVID.
Yeah.
With the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah.
It'll just magically open.
Yeah, it'll just be open in two weeks.
With COVID, he legitimately said it'll just magically go away.
Yeah. It'll just go away.
And honestly, if a miracle happened and that we declared peace.
Yeah.
Right? End of hostilities.
Yeah.
The Strait of Hormuz is not open.
No.
It's not going to be
open. It's closed.
It's a tollway now.
It's gas or grass, man.
Yeah.
And on that note.
Yeah, and on that bombshell. Well, we're going to take a break and we'll be back after this.
You are listening to One Man Revolution with your host, the Revolutionary.
And
the Comrade.
And
the Canadian.
Ooh.
Here we are.
And the peanut gallery is eating cheesecake.
Lucky her.
Yeah, exactly.
Not an innuendo.
No. No. I came out with sticky fingers out of the bedroom. Okay, wait. I suppose...
I suppose eating cheesecake is better than eating
beefcake. Where's the comrag?
Yeah, where is the comrag?
It's all over my pants.
I don't have
a comrag.
I will go get a comrag.
I'll go get a comrag.
All right. He's got it.
Okay, you got a comrag?
He's got easier access.
All right.
Watch your headphones,
yeah. You got
it's all coming apart in the second half.
The com rag on your pants.
I didn't spill a beer this time.
Hey, no, you didn't.
Yes.
Technically, he didn't spill it either. It just decided that it was going to go on his pants.
Okay. And the floor. I don't know if this is the official
It can, that, that's one look, of the Comrades.
The good news about the Comrades is they all look the same.
Yeah.
We watched Rush Hour 2 on Wednesday.
Oh, you did? off the old Plexamonium, yep. Or did you find it out? Yeah. We had a good time with Rush Hour. I made sure all three of them were on there because you never know when someone wants all of them.
Yeah. The other thing is this is not a beer. So I didn't actually spill a beer.
Fair. It's a beverage, though.
It is a beverage. It is a malt-flavored beverage.
I don't know why that one's not foaming up as well. I had to hit it harder. There you go.
What, the dark one?
Yeah.
Or just in general?
Oh, no. Just that one was not foaming up. Yeah.
It wasn't feeling the spirit.
Yeah. This wasn't feeling. Here, take the one with the head because I've had. The head does actually do it.
You're giving him head?
I do like head. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'll give you that.
As he licks his finger.
You heard it. You heard it. You heard it here.
That was
the revolutionary is giving the comrade head. That's
not the first time.
That's it.
You can be a member of the Trump administration.
So what I just hit, Bubba.
But his nipples are parallel.
FBI balls. So this is Demons from Sideward Brewing. It comes in a one pack. And you'll find out why when you take your first sip.
One pack?
Yeah. It's a beer. It's a bourbon barrel aged imperial stout and barley wine with coffee and vanilla.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It's funny. That's,
I love that it's a relabeled can.
Yeah. All their cans are relabeled. Every last one of them. Yeah. Yeah.
I call my belly a one pack.
Oh.
I don't Round have a six pack. I got a one pack.
I call my penis Tupac because it's mostly a hologram.
He died in the 90s?
All right. Not what your wife said. All right. So I also have a Voodoo Ranger IPA.
Yeah. Sorry. That was.
No, because it can take a lot of bullets and keep going.
Yeah. Hey,
oh, there you go. It's the chestnut one. It's
I've got the Urban Chestnut Chickle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Zwickle.
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 Twickle?
And I am drinking a Easy Dust by Elysian. They're non-alcoholic. And
a 12%.
And a 12%.
On the other hand.
It averages out.
It averages out to a much smaller, yeah.
But I was worried that this had gone... I was worried that the Easy Dust had gone bad because it doesn't usually blow up like that. But it tastes fine.
Is that a limited release or is that just they only sell singles?
When it's gone, it's gone.
Right.
Yeah.
They do this periodically.
They usually bottle them.
Yeah, usually
this time
bottled.
They can them. And I'm like, and when I got my bill, I was like, I'll take it. That's cool. That's good.
The other thing is that the bottles are often 750s instead of 500s.
I thought they were 500s.
This needs to go on a shelf for like 3 years, and it would be.
Oh,
it's already really good, but
not in a can.
Not in a can.
No.
No, in a bottle. Mm. The can's not going to do it for you. Yeah.
Cans actually leak.
Yeah, they leak air.
Do they?
Yeah.
Because I've got a can of Old Chubb that's been sitting around for like 7 years.
So you got a 7-year-old Chubb?
You got a 7-year-old Chubb.
Yeah, I do. Donald Trump would be proud.
It's a toadstool.
No, old Chubb is just a hilarious beer.
Should I just bring it next
week? Oh, Old Chubb. I haven't had an Old Chubb in like 7 years.
I know.
That's a great
Old Chubb on draft is pretty good.
Oh, it's really good.
It's on nitro.
It's a Scotch ale.
Yeah,
it's delicious.
Yeah, was it 9%?
No, it's not that. It's not that heavy.
No?
10-50 is heavy.
10-50.
It lives up to its name.
Yeah, I love. Oh, I miss 10-50.
Yeah.
I just miss Chubb that Oscar Blues in general, man.
Yeah.
I miss them.
I had an Oscar Blues when I was out in Denver.
Really?
Yeah, they had it was one I hadn't seen before, and I'm like, I will have that.
They're out in Colorado, aren't they?
Yeah. But they also got bought, right?
They did.
Yeah. I forget which conglomerate.
Maybe that's why they stopped distributing down here.
Yeah, but it's there were some really good breweries, and I want to go back when I have like more time and a driver. Because.
Get a bus pass.
Not even a bus pass. But not being able to just go, I'm going to go to this brewery and then.
Monster bought them.
Monster did. Oh, the Monster Beverages. Yeah.
Like the energy drink?
Yeah.
What?
$330 million in 2022.
Yeah.
Good for them.
In loose ones. And,
and they own Cigar City as well. That explains why.
Monster owns Cigar City?
Everything's gone to hell.
Yeah.
What the hell are they doing? Do they own Four Loko?
No, they should, but.